us do we speak Spanish? And how many people do speak English? So I see we have more hands in Spanish than in English.
Mainly the moderation will be done in... Hola, Fatima. Welcome.
Hello, Fatima. Welcome. Moderation will be done in Spanish, but of course you have the interpretation services provided by ICANN. There are some panelists who do not speak Spanish, so we will listen to them in their native language, and the ones speaking Spanish will speak in Spanish. So thank you very much for being here, and thanks to my friends, first of all, and then experts. They are all friends of mine, so I'm very happy to have them here. Why do we think this space would be interesting for us? Many of us, we are experts in certain fields, or we are university teachers or professors within that technical field. We have many activities focused on training regarding ICANN and internet governance, the internet schools, the European, the African, the schools. Then ISOC has the New Generation Leader Program. But personally, as a university professor, I have a challenge in, for example, I teach networking, and I want to incorporate critical resources, internet critical resources, and I want to engage that with the work of the LACNIC, the RIRs, and I want to implement that in the context that I provide regarding networks. So I am very interested in participating in these ICANN meetings, but since we have so many experts here with us, I would like to share with my expert friends and professors other ideas or to incorporate ICANN-related content in our regular courses at universities. Sometimes these courses are not so flexible. Perhaps Hernan, those of you who are professors, how flexible can we be to change or modify the program or the curricula? But as professors, we can add examples or materials to improve the curricula. And I would also like to reflect on making the most of having Alexander here. We would like to think, perhaps we can ask ICANN, and I also see Fatima. Where is Fatima? Over there. Okay, Fatima, hello. And Fatima is in the communication program. So I would like to know the amount of material that we have and the interpretation and translation services to add this to our courses, even if they have to do with infrastructure, law. So I will now give the floor to the panelists. I would like to then give the floor to my friends and panelists. I have a very special panelist, a friend of mine, Wolfgang Kleinwesser, and he was appointed to the ICANN board, so please, a round of applause for him. And he has a meeting with the board.
But you are welcome to give us some word. I'm so glad that you could join us this morning. And you are my mentor, you know. You know that.
Thank you very much, Olga. Thank you, everybody, for coming to this meeting. And I think it's really the right time to sit here together and to plan and to do the next step forward. The whole story about academic work and ICANN and internet governance goes back to the, in my eyes, to the experience of the Working Group on Internet Governance, which was established by the first World Summit on the Information Society in 2003. And I and some other members of the academic community participated in this working group. And the interesting thing for us was that a lot of governmental representatives, but also other business representatives in the WGIC, came to us and said, where I can study internet governance? And we looked around and discovered that no university in the world offers bachelor or master courses on internet governance. This is very understandable because internet governance is a multidisciplinary phenomenon. You have law, you have business, you have informatics, you have technology, you have communication, you have political science, cultural dimension, a lot of dimensions. So this is a multidisciplinary phenomenon. But universities are organized in a disciplinary way. You have a faculty of law, you have a faculty for business, you have a faculty for political science, a faculty for culture or whatever. So that means if you want to study internet governance, you have to go to 5, 6, 7 faculties to get various pieces out of this. So this is really a huge gap in the academic system because transdisciplinary, multidisciplinary efforts within universities are always, you know, a very difficult thing to handle. Everybody is in favor of it, but if it comes to the real day-to-day operations, the professors teaching their discipline, which is law or economics or informatics or something else. So it means the conclusion from the small group of academics, which included Bill Twake, Avri Doria, Alejandro Pisanti, and others said, okay, if this is not offered by the academic system, we have to create something on our own. So we had a workshop in 2006 together with the International Association for Media and Communication Research and the International Communications Association. And we, the workshop produced two basic ideas. One is we need an independent platform for research. And one is we have to develop curricula for internet governance. The outcome were very concrete, so that means this was the starting point for what is called today GIGANET, the Global Internet Governance Academic Network, which has around 500 academics as members around the globe and has an annual symposium at the eve of the international IGF. The eighth GIGANET symposium took place just recently in Bali, in Indonesia. And as a second outcome from this workshop was the idea to have at least a course, and we called it a summer course or a summer school for internet governance, where we, you know, reflect this multidisciplinary nature of internet governance. And we had a test case. It was 2007 in Germany, in Meissen, and Olga was part of this. And then we discovered there are two summers on the globe, one in the north and one in the south. And we said, you know, we have to have another summer school in the south. So and Olga took the initiative and started this, what is called now the School on Internet Governance, and which travels from country to country. We have already 6 versions now. Ne? So, and in Meissen, we are always on the same venue. And I'm very satisfied that a lot of what you called now the Meissen people are sitting now in various committees of ICANN, because it's a rather effective process. But our slogan is, we are teaching the internet governance leaders of tomorrow. So this is a rather high-level course for people who have been already involved in a certain way and want to get, you know, the higher level. And the gap is that it's not yet internet governance, and ICANN and all this issue, part of the day-to-day operation of national universities or national academies. And I think this is the link, the gap which has to be closed. And in so far, you know, you cannot stop with just offering for a small number of people. So in Meissen, we have around 25 or 30 people. And I just see Milton is part of the faculty in Meissen, and Tatjana Dropina is also part of the faculty. That means a lot of really experts from this community are teaching in the summer school. But it's not enough. So that means we have to go now more to the universities around the globe and have to encourage national universities to make this step into this transdisciplinary field, and they can benefit from the curricula we have developed in the summer school. If you go to Olga's website, to our website, then you will see we have a layered system. You know, this has a more academic section, then a technical section, a political section, then, you know, so that you have various clusters, various modules. like, you know, management of domain names or IP address management or policy dimensions from a regional, from a global perspectives, and history and culture and policy and frameworks, all this. So that means it's a curriculum for around 40 to 60 hours. So this constitutes a full, let's say, master course in a university. And with the new ICANN Academy project, which had its first test here in Buenos Aires, this is a good platform. And my understanding is that the ICANN Academy is a modular system, which still a lot of empty boxes. That means if you make concrete proposals and link national initiatives to this ICANN Academy with a lot of empty boxes, we can create a much more intense network for teaching and education in this field in the next 5 years ahead of us. I think this is the challenge before us. We have something already achieved, but it's not enough. Let's move forward. Thank you, Olga.
Thank you very much for being with us and for your words. And you're free to go to your meeting if you want, or you can join us for the rest of the session, whatever you like. And I would like to ask applause for Professor Kleinwachter again. Thank you. Oh, this is challenging. You are like so many. I will start with the ladies. And Fatima was our student in Sao Paulo. And I'm so proud that she is a MAC member. She was selected for the Multi-Stakeholder Advisory Committee, so we are colleagues in the MAC. And she's also a university teacher. She's a lawyer. And Fatima, we are several, so maybe if you can give your remarks and then we can exchange ideas with the floor. And we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We are so many people here.
Gracias, Olga. Yo también voy.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief, not to speak so much, which is hard for me. I'd like to put it this way, from my experience, and tell what happened to me being a student or a participant of the capacity building course in terms of internet governance, and also through my experience as a university professor and in capacity building programs. I participated in all scholarship programs available at ISOC, Generation Leaders Fellowship programs for ICANN, Internet Governance School. I did a diploma in law and technology, and I'm an attorney. When I entered this world, I didn't understand a thing because attorney's background is different. Our skills are not developed to participate in this world of internet governance, especially at ICANN, where there's a mix of technical, financial, legal issues which make it complicated to participate. So I think it is very important to include among the curricula of universities topics related to internet governance. I think the challenge is how to include those topics. At the University of Cordoba in law school, we participated in a class related to internet governance. Carlos will explain further. We took the internet governance topics to the law students. It is difficult for them to understand how to incorporate these topics. They have a legal background, and understanding these topics, which include technology, is difficult for them. In my personal experience, I noticed that having participated as a teacher in other courses, such as New Generation Leaders in Spanish and Deep Learning Foundation, Infrastructure and Critical Resources, university students do not have the skills to do research. And in these topics, which are in constant evolution, it is important to have these skills. It is very difficult for them to prepare an essay giving their own positions and ideas. My personal opinion is that those of us who participate as teachers should help develop these activities. Something in terms of the materials that exist. In the ICANN strategy for Latin America and the Caribbean, I'm a co-chair of the project related to communications. At the moment, we are in the stage of doing an inventory of the existing materials and how we include them
to disseminate them in our community, especially in a website which is also in this project, targeted at Latin America and the Caribbean, with content in Spanish and Portuguese and in English. I believe somebody else is going to talk about it, but at La Crallo, we have started a capacity building program after the Costa Rica meeting because we detected this need for training in basic aspects to promote participation. These materials may be useful for outreach to the other ICANN participants. We could also see how this can be linked with the online e-learning platform that is being developed at ICANN. This is what I can share for the moment. Thank you, Fatima. Lee?
An expert in human rights, and he works for the Council of Europe. Is that okay?
That's fine.
You can say maybe some more about your background. And I think that your perspective is very interesting, because me being a technician, sometimes I cannot envision the limitations that technology may have into the freedom of speech, of human rights. And we technicians, that's from my perspective, sometimes we don't realize how this may work. We are just focused on the infrastructure and the technology. So your comments and how to include or have this in mind once we teach technology or social sciences or law is very important. Your floor is yours.
Thank you, Olga. Thank you. My name is Lee Hibbard. I'm from the Council of Europe. Yes, like Fatima, yes. And I work in a European context, but often around the world too. And over the last, I would say the last 6 years or so, we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to understand what the internet means for human rights. And so my office is just opposite the European Court of Human Rights. And so every day I'm thinking about the Convention on Human Rights, how human rights, what they mean on the internet, and exactly how will they, what does that mean for states? Because states are the ones which protect your human rights, which guarantee your human rights, and how do they do that online? So I have a book here full of normative texts developed and adopted by member states over the years. Just to go back a little bit in history, when the World Summit concluded in Tunis in 2005, I think many people said that, you know, human rights was done and finished, that we didn't need to talk anymore, it was in the outcome documents, let's move on. Then since then, the Internet Governance Forum was created, and every year, all I see is human rights, human rights, human rights on the agenda. If you look, if you trace, if you correlate the discussions, you'll see a lot of discussion on all aspects of freedom of expression, privacy, freedom of assembly and association, etc. So until the last one that we had recently in Bali, it's awash with questions about the human rights. And now when you see the Snowden revelations and questions of surveillance, we're really talking a lot about the rights of people's privacy and dignity. So, I mean, just to say that last year was quite an important year from a global perspective, from the UN's point of view, they adopted a resolution which said that human rights apply offline but also online. It's very important. And in the European context, we had our first case whereby the country of Turkey was found in violation of someone's right to freedom of expression. It was a case of Yildirim, whereby someone had his access to all his blogs on Google sites blocked. So there was a blanket blocking of his work, and this was seen to be a violation of his right to freedom of expression. It's the first case where you see that the court says to the country, you are violated, this is a violation of his right. So please remedy that. That's a very important step in what we understand. And since then, you know, you've heard about the internet governance principles around the world. There are many principles. Wolfgang talks about them a lot. And we're in this process of consolidation.
I think the meeting in Brazil will take the whole thing about principles further. And those, what do those principles mean? It means decentralization of the internet. It means the integrity, keeping the free flowing traffic on the internet, and many other things. The multi-stakeholder governance is very important in that process. I think I'd just like to say, to conclude, is that we talk about freedom of expression on the internet. When I think of freedom of expression in the offline world, we think about also the freedom of the media. You know, the media needs to be free in order to give you your freedom of expression, for you to access information, to make impartial and informed choices yourselves. I think with the internet, what we're going towards is media freedom is a corollary. It's an integral part of freedom of expression. They're linked, and I think we're moving towards internet freedom. You know, keeping the internet free and open and free flowing to a great extent, and that I think will be a corollary also to the right to freedom of expression. We're not there yet, but there's work to be done. But that's where we're going. And so, to conclude, they're inextricably bound up together now. If you start touching the internet in different ways, you will affect people's human rights. The case law of the courts is coming, and there'll be more and more case law, and it will be consolidated, and it will become more and more apparent that, you know, your expression, your privacy, your ability to associate and assemble online, to participate in democracy, will be affected, and these are things to come. So it's good teaching material, and everyone likes to talk about human rights, so it's coming.
Thank you. I think a good outcome of this conversation could be, Fatima already mentioned some websites and materials. Lee as well, if you can send those links to me and I can compile them and I can share them on Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. Konstantinos, my dear friend, we are very happy to have you here, and you are an expert in intellectual property, so your views are welcome.
Thank you.
From ISOC.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Olga, and thanks for the invitation. So my name is Konstantinos Komaitis. For the past year and a half, I have joined the Internet Society's Public Policy Department. But before that, I was an academic working out of Strathclyde University in Glasgow. I am a lawyer by education, and when this whole thing emerged, called the internet, emerged, for lawyers, the first thing that they've started asking, at least, is whether we need a new regime or we can actually transfer some of the principles of existing laws into the context of the internet. It is encouraging to say that 20 years later, this issue is still not resolved, and academics are still arguing about it. But one of the things that has become extremely apparent is that the internet is informing a lot of the current debates on legal issues that are happening, and intellectual property is one of them. In 2000, I happened to attend a workshop on the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, and I was exposed to this domain name and trademark conflicts that at the time were just a handful, and I've managed to make a PhD out of it. And at the time, there were three people who were writing about domain name and trademark conflicts. One of them is here with us, that is Milton Müller. The other one was Michael Frumkin and Michael Geist. So when I started, there was hardly any bibliography. We were not really sure what was happening. What we knew at the time, however, was that this debate and these discussions could inform a lot about, could inform us about where we want to take trademark law and where we want to take, generally speaking, intellectual property rights. The same happens right now when it comes to copyright. The debate on copyright infringement of the internet has sparked various reforms, has generated very heated discussions. So trying to contextualize a little bit this session,
As far as where I'm coming from, the discussions that are taking place and whether we need to incorporate ICANN and, generally speaking, internet-related institutions and internet-related issues within the academic life is very important. It is, you know, the internet, the story goes, is part of who we are right now. It's become an extension of our everyday lives. Thus, it should inform also academic studies. University students that go to university are exposed to the internet long before they go to university, and they are able to relate. When I was teaching, I was actually telling to my students, when it comes to law, this is as exciting as it gets. I mean, you know, we are going to be talking about issues that you are all familiar with. You are interacting, Facebook and social media and copyright. This is... if you want, where you can attract a lot of their interest. And last but not least, in the context of intellectual property, and I will focus on ICANN because it is about ICANN. ICANN in 1999 came up with a system called the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, which is still operational. It has amassed a huge body of case law. You can actually say that over the years it has acquired a normative status of soft law, international soft law. It has provided a lot of answers, especially regarding jurisdictional issues, which in the context of the internet is creates a headache, especially for litigators and adjudicators and judges. But at the same time, it has posed a lot of questions regarding the compatibility, if you want, of making assumptions like domain names and trademarks are the same thing, and how can we, and you know, just because you have a trademark, you need to have a domain name. So I am very encouraged to see that a lot of people are still engaging in those debates, and they're still trying to find answers to very, very difficult questions, and questions that will be shaping a lot of the discussions, I'm sure, in the years to come. Thanks.
Would you share those materials with us so I can distribute among our friends and our networks? Thank you so much. I said I was going to speak in Spanish and I didn't. So I will switch to Spanish. Hernán?
Hernán? Thank you, Constantino. Thank you, Lee. Hernán Galperín is a researcher, and you're a teacher now, a professor? Yes, at the University of San Andres. I met Hernán working at a network of investigation called DIRSI. Very interesting. Hernán, every now and then, surprises us with newspaper articles, which are very interesting on digital gap and access to technology. Especially, I've read very interesting studies done by all the group of the DIRSI researchers on technology appropriation with from the people with lower income, cell phones, internet. And they've organized a very interesting meeting together with Carolina before the Dubai meeting in order to reflect. I couldn't be there. I was traveling somewhere, but I was invited to reflect on the topics to deal with at last year's meeting at WISIT Dubai. Hernán, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olga. This is Hernán Galperín. My reflection comes from my experience both in Argentina and in the US in research, being in the academia. I was going to conduct a diagnosis, but I think that Professor Kleinbachter did it perfectly well. The main challenge we have ahead is that we are faced with a multidisciplinary topic, and the academia is organized under disciplines. It's very difficult to break the logic of disciplines that universities have. So, as a diagnosis, he already did the diagnosis based on my experience of 10 years studying and teaching the U.S. and then also in Argentina. Why do I feel
that this diagnosis is even harder for us in Argentina, and I think this can be the case in Latin America also. I don't know about the other countries in the Global South, I'm sure, but this is the case in Latin America. In the first place, Latin America universities are organized in such a manner that it is even harder to do multidisciplinary work for two reasons. First, public universities have a scale. Public universities have huge schools, which are universities per se. So the School of Engineering and the School of Economic Science may live completely apart and have no, and not get together at meetings or at committees or at research centers, which really surprised me when I studied in Stanford and then I taught in USC in California. Crossing among faculties of engineering, social sciences, and many other disciplines was constant in different environments. This does not happen in the universities which have such a large scale, 200, 300,000 students. Therefore, it's very difficult to have this interdisciplinary work. On the other hand, we have the phenomenon of the private universities. We have specialized, or we have private universities which only teach engineering, or only teach management and business, or only teach social science, and a bit further, which is the case of the university where I'm working. So we have a dual play of too large a scale, which does not enable interdisciplinary work, and on the other hand, a specialization in the private universities, which does not facilitate it either, because you need to go out of your university and find colleagues in another university to work in conjunction. On the other hand, undergraduate courses, you may know that undergraduate courses in the Anglo-Saxon world are organized in such a manner that there's a major in one area, but you can choose a minor, or by being a computer student, you may take courses in political affairs or international affairs. And that's where these intersections occur among the degrees. The system we have in Latin America and in many other countries, the system, the European continental traditional system, does not enable this intersection from the day one. When you decide to study computer science or international studies, you only take your specific courses. So getting out of that system for undergraduate students is much harder. So we have fewer opportunities for interdisciplinary overlapping. The contrary happens in postgraduate courses. In Latin America, we have graduate courses, or we have few graduate courses in general, and they are too wide. We have graduate courses in social science. We have a PhD in social science. So in the PhD in social science, I have at least two students who work on governance in social science, but their PhD colleagues study the most varied topics, such as political parties and representation, going to social insertion of the children. So PhDs are too wide, while in the Anglo-Saxon world, at least in the American world, at the graduate level, both masters and PhDs, we have more specific specializations where you can choose to study telecommunications law and things of the like, which are concrete and relate to internet governance and ICANN. On the other hand, we have educational systems which are much less flexible in Latin America and more centralized. In order to have a change in the curriculum, you need to request permission from the ministry. You can do it, but you need to request permission. You need to have it approved in your course. You can do anything you like. And there's some freedom, which is the basis of the work that we do. But the truth is that in order to have changes in the curricula is much more structured and there's less flexibility. Each change requires a higher level of approval because the programs are more centralized. In many degrees, such as law, we give certificates which enable you to conduct your profession. So these degrees are required some minimum characteristics. All this causes the system to have much less flexibility. I could go on and on, but the overview and the diagnosis given by Professor Kleinwaster is more problematic in Argentina and in Latin America, I believe. Briefly, if I have one more minute, Olga, what can we do? Of course, what do we do to try to deal with these challenges we have of studying internet governance? I believe basically there are two ways. One is saying, well, the system is very rigid. I do something outside of the system. This is partly what has to be done. I think Olga has done it with the Internet Governance School in some way, in one way. Even though there is some articulation with the universities, she does it outside the university traditional system, at least. GigaNet is another example where a new association of studies was founded outside the traditional studies. This is valuable, but I think that the battle has to go on within universities because that's where the students are, where the funding is, where the system of rewards exists in connection with the traditional system. I believe that the experiences outside the system are valuable, but we still need to push a battle inside universities. I have founded a research center on technology and society. I'm always battling with the law school because I do something on IT law, and I fight with the public policies schools because I do something on policy and internet. But the fights are worth it, and at the end of the day, there's a valuable synergy in doing work together. Thank you, Olga. Thank you, Hernan. Thank you for the excellent description you made of the university system in Argentina, where I belong. I am a teacher of the University of Buenos Aires, which is gigantic, and I agree with you that we don't have much interaction among colleagues, unless we are friends or some informal interaction.
We have Red Clara, Olga Cavalli speaking. Here I have my colleague. This is an university networking net of Latin America and the Caribbean. Am I right? And I think that this interconnection among universities, well, this is something that we do not have done in Argentina, in this place. So your comments are welcome. Please tell us about you and where you come from. I would like to thank you because I am a newcomer, and I am surprised at seeing so many people. And I have also, I'm also interested in the academia. My name is Pablo Carballo. I am one of the directors of Red Clara, the Latin American Consortium of Advanced Networks, composed of 12 countries in Latin America through a scientific network for the high traffic of information. And we support research in all these countries through different infrastructure, for example, computing sciences, video conference. And we have different initiatives related to telemedicine, nanotechnology, biotechnology, et cetera, et cetera. I come from the Equatorian network, and this is, I am new at this network. I have been working for 6 years at the board of this network, and as a director, I'm also director of the Red Clara. When it comes to my background, well, I come from the software engineering field, and since 2000, I was able to take a PhD in the Catalunya University, and I had the opportunity to participate in some problems in the telematic area, and I have a master on services and networks based on inclusion. One of the surprises that I have found in participating in this event is that any of those of that background is, or any of the members had any knowledge about ICANN. So, for example, I am one of the members who do not know about where the IP numbers come from. For many years, I've been related to the telecommunications industry, and I had the chance to participate in the software engineering area in companies which provide telecommunication services. With that experience, I'm also surprised at seeing the low engagement that I had as an industry member in terms of internet governance. I was worried about the regulatory national aspects, but the not international governance. Taking into account all this information, for me, it was very natural to have a difference or a gap between the industry and the academia in terms of goals. The academia is devoted to research, pure research. And on the other hand, that relationship that has to do with knowledge and with new techniques. But in this event, I have discovered that there is a difference or a dichotomy among the government organizations. I have met many political people, providers, product providers, and service providers, and many people coming from the academic field, but not because they are professors, but because they have certain relationships with the certain networks or organizations related to ICANN. I have another difference among the academia and the standardization organizations. What I can say from my experience is that what we do as professor is to mention the standards, the government bodies, but we do not deepen into the activities and the information on policies that are being generated at the governmental level. Therefore, I believe that there is a need, and I ratify what my colleagues have said before, there is a need to open this space and to have this space among the academia and the governmental bodies. And as a suggestion, because you were requesting suggestions for the future, well, I think that sessions like these are very good. Perhaps we should include other specific topics and focus topics, but this is something that should be kept in ICANN. Not only discussions forums like the one we have here, but probably we can think about in an academic forum, we can have certain sessions where we can introduce academic topics related to the interests or related topics. So we have the space open, and I hope to be able to participate in the future when I get more involved in terms of governance. Perhaps I will be able to make more contributions. Now I can give you an overview from someone coming from the outside world. I am a newcomer in governance issues, and this is my proposal, Olga. We can keep on debating within this forum with a more academic focused and to have more participation within ICANN forum. This is Olga Cavalli speaking. It is very interesting what you said, because I have never thought of creating a space to, and I'm looking at Alexander here, to present certain academic documents. And I think this is a very good and excellent idea. And I'm always a newcomer at ICANN, because I always meet new people. There are new things. This is a very growing ecosystem. So please do not feel that you are alone. And thank you very much for your words. Fernando Gond is a very well-known engineer, but I know him because he's the only, I think, Argentinian, perhaps Christian, you might help me, actively participating in the ITF list. I participate in the list, but I just read the information. I follow these lists, and I see there is the intention of having an ITF meeting in Argentina. I've been talking to many people, LACNIC, Ayana people, ICANN people, and I have always expressed that these countries is great to have a meeting like that. And they're always telling me the same. We need to have people interested in that topic. So you have been very involved in that issue, so you are welcome. We would like to hear about your knowledge and experience in the ITF. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Christina speaking. I was thinking about focusing on technical issues. As a personal introduction, I work in a technical area, mainly technical area, and all the comments that I will make in this workshop will have to do with the technical area. And because of that, the policy aspect is, I'm not aware of the policy aspect. So Christian will know. Now, I have some notes to deal with. Olga Kabel speaking. Okay, remember that you have translation. Christian speaking. No, I would like to know how translators will translate the word notes or machete in Spanish. When it comes to the inclusion of ICANN contents within universities, well, I'm always thinking about, or if we can include those contexts, or, and that is my idea, or if the university should focus on principles rather than technologies. And this has a practical application, because when we see cases where technology is taught at universities, they teach current technologies as if they were the best thing. And sometimes they are not focusing on the standards, because sometimes technology is not the most important thing, and we need to focus on policy. So the problem with that is that when, for those people coming to the network field, they believe that what we have is the best thing we can have, and sometimes that is not true. So we have many things, we have many technologies implemented, but taking into account what we know now, if we can start from scratch, things would be different. So as to be able to have that overview, principles should be very clear. I took courses where I can have TCP issues taught, and there are some other technical contexts that are given as something very important, and that is not true. Olga Cavalli speaking. Oh, I would like to know about that. Christian speaking. What else can I tell you? And then we have certain things to develop in terms of engagement. The problem sometimes is that it is interesting to participate in the ITF, but in order to participate in the ITF, you need to have knowledge about current technologies. And this is sometimes against or has to do with what I said before. If you want to take into account or if you want to debate about those technologies, well, you are not paying attention to the principles, because if we are focusing on the norms, on the principles, we need to study. But in terms of protocols, well, that is not related to the principles or the rules. So it would be interesting to see more people involved on the ITF. But I don't know if that would be feasible or if it would be feasible to have students from universities coming to these type of working groups or groups. Now, regarding your question about the meeting in Latin America, well, if I have to give you a political answer, well, I don't have an answer. Sometimes the argument, especially from developed countries, they say that a meeting could not be held in Latin America because costs would be very high. So it would be very expensive for those people to travel to Latin America. So the question would be how it is supposed that people in Latin America, in developing countries where there are difficult issues, where sometimes the local reality of a country might be difficult. So how can they do, or what can they do to go to other continents or to other countries? As a participant, sometimes it is impossible. So if those making the decision are interested in the results, well, that is a problem.
we want to have more Latin American participation to hold a meeting in some other place. But how are we going to engage those people? There is another reality as well. There are certain mechanisms to participate, such as mailing list. And we could use these tools in a better way. And this is not perhaps a good reason for not to participate. In fact, this was my case. I've been participated in the ITF for 2 years, and there was a member from Finland who was presenting my papers, for example. And when I was able to travel, so I was unemployed, so I could meet that person. For example, I have here something. I have a computer here, and I see questions from the remote participation. Olga Cavalli speaking. A question. Do you attend all the ITF meetings? Because for Latin American participants, sometimes this is far away, or it is difficult to attend. Because what I know is that no meeting was held in the Southern Hemisphere, for example. So sometimes this is difficult. Christina speaking. I have attended the last meeting. I mean, as a personal experience, I attend. My first meeting was in Canada, and I went to a hostel, and I learned about this meeting and about the city. So the city was a very rainy city, so it rained all the days I stayed there. So I met some other Argentine people in other meetings, not only in the ITF. And sometimes for those coming from a not favorable context, the possibility of achieving things have to do with your capacity or skill to adapt to certain situations. So you can have different choices. Olga Cavalli speaking. Thank you very much. Now we have our friends from the University Network, Mariela Rocha and Guillermo Sicileo. They are performing many activities in terms of outreach related to IPv6, and they have and they offer interesting conferences. So we would like to know, Guillermo and Mariela, your point of view regarding this issue of universities, because you interact directly with universities.
Hello. This is Guillermo Sicielo. Thank you, Olga, for your invitation. I'm going to talk about the lack of information on these topics at university degrees, especially talking about engineering or IT degrees. I believe that some of these topics, the most technical topics, are mentioned in undergraduate courses even, but not with sufficient depth and not with a sufficient length and update on the topics dealt with. For example, in network degrees or network courses, it's very common to touch on IPv6, but almost at the end or separate from information about networks. So still today, examples are given and courses on networks are given on IPv4, where IPv6 should be already part of the course, at least at the same level as IPv4. It shouldn't be separated. The same for DNS. The latest news are not dealt with, such as DNSSEC. and the things that are related to IPv6 in the DNS are sent in IPv6, not in DNS. So all those topics are not very much assimilated by the teachers teaching the courses. And although they are seen more in extension in more optional courses, in graduate courses. In undergraduate courses, there are optional courses where you can perform a better introduction of these topics. In my opinion, what is failing is the fact that teachers are neither involved in these topics nor participating in this fora, and they do not have information or knowledge on the internet ecosystem, so to speak. So I believe that one thing that we should do to disclose these topics, I don't think it's so difficult to include them at the undergraduate level. There's quite a lot of freedom for teachers to include them, even in some optional courses, if not inside the curriculum. But among the courses in a degree, these topics can be dealt with. But information and training is missing for teachers. So one of the initiatives that my colleagues were mentioning, generating bibliography and materials, there's lots of materials on the internet. But maybe it's not so easy to find it if you're not used to finding it. I think it is good to create a base of knowledge, especially on published material. We've conducted other initiatives, such as preparing the book for IPv6. But we should focus on this extensively, on training the teachers. And through the review, Marila is going to tell you further about initiatives we've conducted to take this a bit to a more massive stage in Argentina. This is basically my idea. Olga Cavalli, thank you for reminding me. I'd forgotten about the Internet Society Argentina. The Internet Society Argentina chapter made a book called IPv6 for Everybody. It was translated into several languages, English, Portuguese, Catalan, Euskera. It was very successful. Now we are about to launch the update, a second part of IPv6 for Everybody. Mariela and Ticho, I always call you Ticho, but that's not your name, have been collaborators, the same as Christian. Mariela, how's your baby?
Very great. She's still too young. This is one of my first tasks after I've joined, after my maternity leave. Thank you for asking. This is Mariela Rocha speaking. I have kind of a draft to tell you about the idea I have for this panel. Before giving my view, I would like to add to Guillermo's comment that, of course, from the knowledge we have of how universities act, we know what we are saying is, in general terms, we know there are many universities who do manage for these topics related to ICANN to be included in some way in the curricula. In fact, when I started many years ago, I'm talking about the time where IPv6 used to be called IPNG, IP Next Generation. In my network course, we saw IPv6 due to the initiative of my professor back then. He opened some space called Internet Working, and there we first saw network masks, IP addresses, and we saw it both in IPv4 and IPNG. The book that we used had a separate section for IPNG. This is more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
So what we are exposing in this panel is the general terms. I know that there are people from the academia and the public, so I'm sure we'll hear about other initiatives which do help these topics from ICANN be included in the curricula in the universities. We are creating an association which is called Association of Networks of Universities. We are an association that combines universities. What is it that we do or that we can do for the topics of interest for ICANN to reach universities? Basically, I would like to divide this in two parts. First, what do we do with the contents? And on the other hand, what are the ways that we work so that the contents can reach the universities? When I talk about contents, I mean two types. From the one hand, technical content. On the other hand, other topics which are not so technical, which relate to internet governance, activities at fora such as the ETF, the Internet South Governance School, IGF. The technical topics are topics such as IPDNS, IPv6, etc. How do we get this to reach universities? Basically, through two channels. On the one hand, through seminars and training sessions. On the other hand, through working as an articulating agency. Through seminars and training sessions, we have two scopes. On the one hand, what we call the network technicals, universities are all combined through a private network. That is to say, universities to connect to each other don't need to go to the internet. They need to go to an interconnection network for universities. The technical people in this network try to, on an annual basis, hold events where, on the one hand, we discuss technical topics that we've been mentioning. On the other hand, we try at each meeting to bring people from the area related to these ICANN topics, such as Olga. Olga, you've come to our 2010 meeting. You went there to speak about internet governance. Christian was talking about ISOC. We also dealt with IETF to try to incentivize the technical people from universities to begin participating in IETF. Well, in conclusion, this about those who participate in the network. Many others are also students. Many of them are also teaching at the university. And in addition to this, there is another series of training seminars and sessions which are not held by us, but where we are invited to participate. In general, those are initiatives taken by directors of computer centers at universities, professors of related courses, engineering, telematics. We've given a course of internet governance at the University of Litoral, Santa Fe, called upon by the director of telematics, who has final degree courses in engineering open to all the students. Those talks are very well received because maybe for the very first time the students hear how the world of internet is organized, what are the organizations where I want to follow. To round up my presentation, I just want to mention that as an articulating entity, when there is an interest from a teacher, when a teacher wants to work in these areas, we try to put them in contact with the people in the media who develop these topics. For example, we've put in contact people from the University of Rosario with ISOC people so that those topics can be included in the curricula or in an optional course or the like. Finally, a Rio in attempts to be a framework or a scenario where all this type of training may occur and all the necessary help that is needed to bring the knowledge on internet governance and technical topics and fora, etc., to the universities with the most capillarity as possible. Olga speaking. Mariela, how many universities can make up the Rio? Mariela speaking. All the national universities, 49 universities. Olga speaking. How many universities are in the Red Clara network? Mariela speaking. In fact, all of them, because the Rio is directly connected to Innova Red in Argentina, and from there we access Red Clara. So the connection of all universities to Red Clara is virtually direct. Olga speaking. Red Clara combines all the Rios of each country. Exactly. You have connection with all the universities from all over the world. You're like Olga speaking.
So gracias, Mariela. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Mariela. Cristian O'Flaherty, he's a friend of ours. He's from Argentina. He's gone to Uruguay. We love him all the same. He works in the Internet Society, and he's also a technical expert. Cristian.
Gracias, Olga, por la...
Thank you, Olga, for the introduction and for the invitation. It's hard to speak at the very end because all the important things have already been mentioned. This is why I chose you to be at the end. I thought you were beginning from the right. Never. Marilia, Carlos, and Cristian are my stars. But there's a dual challenge because I cannot repeat, and I have little time, so I'll try to be brief and original. I don't know if I'll make it. What I'm going to propose is as how to bring content to universities was already well covered, I'm going to talk about how to incorporate these universities in this ecosystem, because the universities were the creators of everything. At the beginning, everything that was needed for the internet to start operating was done thanks to the universities, not only technically speaking by developing everything that was needed for the internet to operate, but also financially, operationally. This is how it started. Little by little, it gave place to all the community to be incorporated to create this model. In our region in particular, and in all the least developed regions in the 90s, the same thing happened. The internet started to work in the countries thanks to the universities. Almost everything that was going on for the internet in one country went to the universities. All the operation, the financing, all the rules were covered by the universities. Now we come to this day where universities are not participating enough in this internet model or ecosystem, especially in these least developed regions. Maybe when you go to an IETF meeting, you see more involvement from developed countries, academia. But this is not the case, in particular, in Latin America. It's not happening. So how do we manage to give them back this relevant role? How do we bring back the universities to the internet ecosystem? Because this naturally is going to enable the internet topics to penetrate the curricula and the topics of research within each university. Let me skip some proposals so we can discuss. One simple manner relates to the needs of governments to tackle internet topics. Sometimes the governments, when they have a need, they call their friend at the university. This communication is a personal one. It's a communication with an individual that they know who knows a lot at a certain university. If we could articulate this better and give this a more renowned role for that communication, for that advice, bless you. This would be very good for both parties. Governments, because they will have a better advice, and for the universities, because they will have better recognition. The fora or regulators are also related to this. There's a forum that's called CITEL, which groups all the regulators
in the countries. And from this forum, CITEL, which has government representatives, they want to have contacts with universities. At a CITEL meeting, the project was approved for the universities to become more involved in regulation topics and this forum of regulators. For this, they've given an open invitation for the universities to approach, then the universities are welcome and they should take this role to collaborate with governments at a regional level, more formally speaking and more actively. Of course, in terms related to the IETF, as I was saying before, Latin America's engagement in the IETF and in particular in the academia in these regions within IETF is minimal. They are more related to personal efforts than to the efforts of the institution to participate in the IETF. There is no assistance from the universities for professors or researchers, not to speak to about students to participate. There's no promotion either within universities of what happens at IETF. And as Fernando was saying, maybe those discussions at IETF are not for the students because the students are learning more basic stuff. The things should help them for the long term, not discussions about topics that are being defined at the moment. We have a lot of detail. However, their professors and the research areas within universities should be involved and contributing not only to the discussion but also with ideas and creativity to the new topics. So, again, this is more a need from the community to have a contribution from the university. And again, the university, by being involved in those discussions, will be nourished by all the discussion and will bring it back to its groups. In turn, IETF and the technical community will benefit because they will bring new groups that still do not have a good representation. New forms of tackling the issues will be presented. There's a very up-to-date discussion on diversity at the IETF, so that not everybody will be not all of the same people should be discussing the same stuff all the time. There's an effort from IETF to try to open up the field of the IETF to new groups, and I think that the universities have a very important role in this effort to a wider diversity. So, going to this specific question and this relationship between ICANN and the universities, I believe that the first thing that should be done is look at the areas and the objectives we have to tackle the issues. We can see that there are many efforts that are already working, such as the regulators, the promotion by IETF. So we should supplement these efforts. We should bring new topics, maybe if it's necessary, but we should leverage the things that we already acknowledge where the university has a role and those efforts that are currently undergoing and try to expand them. In the region in particular, there are many areas where universities are welcome, and it is very easy to incorporate them. The regional registry, LACNIC, has very good programs for universities to participate, and there are lots of things within those discussions and those meetings that are very interesting for universities. It would be very good to have wider participation from universities, and it's going to be very useful for universities to leverage this. I mentioned the governments. I mentioned Red Clara, which is present here. It is a mechanism that's very simple for universities and organizations in the internet that collaborate, are all close to Red Clara. So it's very easy through these academic networks to reach the internet societies, LACNIC, ISOC, and all the ones that we are trying to support with universities. The Network Operators Forum. As I said at the beginning, the internet was operated by the universities. Now this is no longer the case. However, there is a lot of knowledge from the universities, and there are universities' networks that are as complex as the operators' networks. The universities should participate further in network operator discussions. They should be part of the community of operators. There's LACNODE in the region, which is the community of operators of the Latin America and the Caribbean, and new groups of operations are beginning to emerge. There's a very active one in Brazil, a new one in
Chile, another one in Argentina. So groups of operators are emerging, people who operate the networks in each country. It is in those groups where universities have a role as a collaborator and as a party that can benefit from all those discussions. And ISOC has many programs to support universities to participate at each of those fora. So you're invited to go into the ISOC website to look at those scholarship programs to join the IETF and each of the meetings. A very good program that you were mentioned, Next Generation Leaders, where there's training, an e-learning platform. There's a lots of tools in the Internet Society where universities can use to attain these objectives. So you are all welcome. Olga speaking. Thank you, Christian.
I was going to make a comment, but I forgot about it. Marilia, are you going to speak Portuguese? We have translation.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Olga. I prefer to speak in English because we are all through the week. Sometimes it's difficult to switch language after you are immersed.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. My name is Marília Maciel. I am a researcher and coordinator of the Center for Technology and Society, which is one of the four centers of research of the Law School of Getúlio Vargas Foundation in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. This is my first ICANN meeting, so I'm here supported by the fellowship program. And the first point I wanted to make is I can't stress enough the importance of the fellowship program to bring new voices and especially academics into this process. It's a very important entry point. I'd like to make 2 points about the role of academics in the work of ICANN. I think that the first of them is the importance of academics to liaise with the academic communities in their home countries and with society in general, and it is the point that we are mainly talking about here. But I think there is also a second point that is very important, is that to introduce academic reflections into the work of ICANN, and I think that we are in a very key moment to do so. Academics that participate in the ICANN process, most of them, they are also involved with UN processes, with the IGF. So they have this broad view about the regime. And I think that it's very important that they do some cross-fertilization because of what is happening and the role that ICANN is having in internet governance and the role that ICANN will play next year. So I think it's very important that academics that are in both spaces make an effort for the community to make contributions for the process that will be initiated hopefully next year in the summit in Brazil. Another point that I think that academic community can contribute a lot is to raise developmental issues into the work of ICANN. And this is something that I know, it's my first meeting, but I have been following the work of ICANN for some time. And I know that this is something that NCUC and Bill have been raising a lot. I think that academics are independent, mostly independent players, which doesn't mean that they are neutral. There's no neutrality in the debate, but they are independent players. And I think that the discussions that we had on new GTLD programs, for instance, and how to make the market less concentrated and how to develop study impacts of new GTLDs into developing countries and so on, this is something that academics need to raise a lot here. And I would like to see more of that. The role of academics in their communities back home, which is, I think is the main point of the discussion, is really important. Because when we think about the spaces of universities, we are actually talking about building the next generation that will participate in these discussions. And we are not just talking about disseminating knowledge, but making sure that citizens in our society are able to participate in policy discussions regarding regulation of the internet. And coming from a law background and being part of an organization that has helped the Brazilian government to develop and shape the civil rights framework that we call Marco Civil da Internet, we realize how important it is for citizens to be informed and have a minimal understanding of how internet works, how it is governed, which are the main institutions, so they are able to participate in public policy debates as informed citizens. So everybody, no matter which constituencies they belong to, they have been to the university, so university is a fundamental space to exchange knowledge and to make sure that people are more informed to participate. But you have asked us to share experiences of how we have introduced ICON in our academic work. Well, I can say briefly that the Center for Technology and Society, we have in the undergraduate course of the law school, we teach the course on intellectual property rights, and we have one class that is mainly dedicated to explain how the domain name system works and how the name dispute resolution works. So we relate this with our class on trademarks. And this is something that our law students have find very interesting as an entry point to this discussion on ICON. And another good surprise that I have is that for the first time I had the chance to discuss internet governance regime in a course on international relations in FGV as well. So it was a very interesting class when we talked about how this regime works and what is the role of governments. For them, it's sort of like, no, we can't understand. We can't see how it works in the international arena because for them, everything is about sovereignty. And that they are pretty much, their mindset is pretty much state-centric. So for me, it was really interesting to have this discussion with them. So sometimes places that we believe that we not be very open to discuss this kind of issues, they become places that you can start to change mindsets as well. So I think that answering your question, it's very possible to include ICON in related topics in universities. I think that we just need to identify the right entry points because these discussions can be very complicated. So for law courses, domain name dispute resolution for us has proven to be a very interesting entry point. Maybe for international relations to talk about network governance as a new way to perform governance in an international arena for engineers, maybe it's IPv6 or DNSSEC, but we have to identify the right entry points to hook them, to get their attention, to develop other courses and to present them more complex stuff and more overreaching stuff. So I think that the main challenge that I have faced as a professor is to identify the right material for my classes. So for instance, in the class about the UDRP, the text of UDRP is pretty much straightforward, but the devil is in the details. So I had to go through many, many cases to identify where the panelists have understood that there was enough similarity to start a process or if the party was acting or not in bad faith. And we did a lot of work going through the cases and finding very good definitions about that to build the course that we built. So this is something that we would like to share with others as well. I think that in the course of international relations, we have good materials from ICON, such as the introductory beginner's guide, but we need something that is not created by ICON, so doesn't have this institutional look. We need material that is more critical about the organization and more reflexive, so maybe we need to produce that. I think that in terms of way forward, one thing to do is to map what is already available, such as the wiki of ICON. There are presentations that have been put available there. We have now learn.icon, and we had this very interesting discussion about the platform yesterday. I just think that we need to make sure that this platform, as a learning environment, it is receptive of material that shows different views, not necessarily the views of the organization, but critical material that also presents challenges regarding the policies that ICON develops. So it needs to be pretty much an open space that we can fill in. Maybe we need to establish some kind of coordination to exchange resources and to have a space that we can have academic discussion discussions, such as we have the GigaNet in the IGF, maybe back to back with the ICANN meeting or with our regional IGFs. It would be something very interesting, and develop a platform where we can put all these documents, amazing documents that we are discussing here, and to be available for everybody to improve and to use in their classes, and license maybe in Creative Commons so people can use for non-commercial purposes. That would be it. Sorry for taking too long.
No, that's okay. It's I think that the issue is coordination. Right? I think that the materials are there. It's an issue of coordination and distribution, like many times in our lives. We have 10 minutes. We have Carlos, and also we have comments from the floor from George Sadowski, board member of ICANN, and Bill Drake. He was going to be our co-moderator, but he is damaged by the very strong air conditioning, so he's a little bit, his voice is not very good. And also we have some questions from remote, right? So you want to say something, Bill, now?
Whatever. Now? Okay. Hi. Sorry, everybody. Yes, I was supposed to co-moderate, and yesterday completely lost my voice, but now I'm whacked out on cortisone and anti-inflammatories, and I think I'm a little bit better and able to communicate. I'll just make a few quick observations about my own experience, since I couldn't help you with this. I've been teaching global governance of information and communication technologies for 25 years at universities in the United States, and since the WSIS process, have been building in courses on global internet governance specifically. At both the undergraduate and graduate level, and I do that now with the University of Zurich in Switzerland. I was involved with Wolfgang in the working group in internet governance and the discussions about launching the Global Internet Governance Academic Network, which has really turned out to be quite a successful enterprise and has really encouraged a lot of scholars from around the world to find each other. You know, you find out that there's the one person in the Ukraine or Belarus or Laos who's teaching internet governance, and they find out about this network, and they come to a meeting, and they connect with colleagues, and they share things, and it turns out to be really helpful. I was also involved with Wolfgang in the summer school internet governance, as Olga's, and also teach in Olga's summer school in Latin America, the one we just did in Africa, at Durban, and so on. First, I'll make just a couple of real quick points. One is clearly, I think capacity building courses play an important role and are really useful, but they're very, very different from university-based education. And so as much as we in the IG space often talk about the glories of capacity building, and we all support it, I think there's just such an enormous qualitative difference between what you get in a short capacity building setting and in a sustained academic series university environment, so that they're complementary. It's not a trade-off, but I think we need to recognize more in this space the importance of the universities, and that's why I think what you're doing here is very important. It's very difficult, in my first point, to institutionalize internet governance as an academic field. As Wolfgang says, when we looked, there was no broad degree programs offering a range of courses that then terminated in an actual internet governance degree. There are individuals, of course, around the world who teach a course or two, you know, or who teach a course in an established field like internet, like intellectual property that deals with internet governance. But in terms of having an actual degree program, there's not much. Internet studies, a little bit broader framing, does have a growing home, and you have places like Oxford University where you can get a degree in that. But the core problem is really the resistance of traditional academic disciplines. You know, I come from political science. When I tell political science colleagues that, you know, this is the work that I'm doing, and I show them a paper, they say, but it's not framed as a contribution to the literature. And the literature means the theoretical material in the journals that they read. So they don't care that the new GTLD program is a complex, interesting terrain with extraordinary politics that has huge consequences for the real world and so on. They only want to know, are you applying a neo-realist or a neo-institutionalist theory to explain it?
And of course, when you start from that framework, it becomes very difficult to convince colleagues that, in fact, this merit is being treated as a field that should take its rightful place along others in the academic topology. There are fields like gender studies and others, quote, studies that are viewed as interdisciplinary, but those have a little more emotive and political weight. It's very hard to sell people on the idea of internet governance as a transdisciplinary space that should merit offices and budget and resources and all that. And I think that that problem will continue for a long time, so we just have to work around it. We have to support the things that are there. The second point is about the pedagogy and the problems of teaching, which some people have mentioned. You know, I know that in my own experience, if you teach a course with 14 sessions on internet governance, you know, if you're going to cover what happened in the WSIS, the IGF, all this, the best you can do is maybe four sessions on ICANN. So you do like 1.5 on ICANN, the institution, and 2.5 on new GTLDs and regulation, and pretty much you're done, you know. So my students get 20 minutes about the WHOIS, okay, which means it's very difficult to take any real issue and drill down deeply into it. I sat through the Gina So Council meeting the other day about the IGO motion, you know, and the complexity of that. And there's an enormous story. You could do an entire course session on it, but who's got time? And plus 25-year-olds or 20-year-olds, their heads start to swim. Unless they're going to make a career of this stuff, it's just like it's too much. So you have to. It's very challenging to find things that are pitched at just the right level. I always really struggle. You say there's the material out there. I really struggle to find the right things to assign. Even on new GTLDs, such a huge area, the only articles, like academic articles I can find, are written by intellectual property lawyers in law journals. Okay? I want something that lays out, this is where it came from, this is how it happened, here are the interests involved, here's the institution, here's how it's evolving, here's what it'll mean for the internet and the world. I can't find anything like that. And so this brings me then to my last point, and this is where I think what you're doing here could help, okay? We do need to find better ways of aggregating access to resources about ICANN and ICANN-related issues. There are things out there. My colleague Roy Baesti maintains for GigaNet, a global repository. He's a librarian, and he has an online repository of internet governance materials, which is quite useful, and you can look at it on the website. And he's doing one now for NCUC, my constituency group as well, for our documents. There is the European Commission's forthcoming GIPO program, which intends to be a platform that brings things together. But there's nothing that's really specific drill down on ICANN stuff, where you can go and get like a nice, crisp, and unbiased overview in 10, 15 pages of the new GTLD program in a scholarly way, or WHOIS, or IRTP, or the Registry of Credit Agreement, or how CCNSO and the CCs work. We don't have that material, so it'd be really great if, as part of this, you could stimulate a debate around ICANN creating a resource that then modularly professors around the world could draw on when they're putting something together. That would, I think, help to break the blockage there and would serve as a good collective enterprise for all of us to contribute to.
Thank you very much, Bill, and I'm sorry that your voice is still not... You found it, but you didn't found it completely. Carlos, our last panelist... Thank you for your patience. Gracias por tu paciencia y bienvenido.
Thank you for your patience and welcome. Thank you, Olga, for inviting me. I would really like to have a minute because I know we are past our agenda. I'm Carlos Aguirre. I work at the University of Cordoba. I've taught there at law school for 25 years, and for 10 years we have worked with an optional course where students decide to register in this course because they need that to become attorneys. We are talking to them about ICANN, internet governance, and all the challenges that this lies ahead, even in our framework of law and economy. I just want to leave two concepts because of time. I believe these two concepts I want to mention for you to analyze
and to take home if you wish, are some of them in the public and the public meeting in Nairobi some years ago and at the Costa Rica meeting where I was chair of participation and engagement in ALAC. I believe that all the online tools are very good. They are wonderful, but the students still need to have a face-to-face meeting with those who are going to become their tutors or teachers, because in that way, the student is nourished and takes some commitment. He needs to know those who are teaching him, and he needs to know that that person is knowledgeable. To know in this environment, it is important to work within. Learning by doing is a reality here. If you're not working from within, you haven't the faintest idea how all this works. And even working within, it's very complicated. The second concept I would like to leave is that I would like to commend for the initiative. You've been working on it for many years, the same as I, but the timeline in these issues is outreach, so that somebody becomes knowledgeable in this. If they know about this, if they learn about this, they can participate. If they participate, they engage. If they engage, we are creating new leaders. If we have new leaders, they will be the trainers of new leaders. This is a timeline, I believe. It is essential for us to understand this. I believe that ICANN is realizing that the outreach is fundamental, and that in order to do outreach, there is nothing better than universities. Thank you. Olga speaking. Thank you, Carlos.
Hey, board member of ICANN. Welcome, George, and thank you for sharing the panel with us. The workshop.
Thanks very much, Olga.
Thank you.
The board of directors of ICANN, but I'm speaking here in my personal capacity. I think this is one of the more useful and promising sessions that I have ever attended in an ICANN meeting. You know, ICANN, we travel around the world having meetings in various places, various regions, and we do it in large part because we want participation in ICANN from everybody who's at all interested, and we make it easier by trying to move closer to them. On the other hand, I think that the value is equally conferred upon those of us who are members of this traveling roadshow who come to these regions, and through sessions like this, we learn about the extent and the depth of things that are going on here. Now, ICANN has, as you know, a fairly limited mandate within the internet environment, names, numbers, security, and stability, but it's a really important mandate, and I think that the kinds of things that are being discussed here, the training, and especially the research, the production of good thought regarding some of the issues and problems that we face is really, really important, and you can help ICANN as well as the rest of the internet governance space by thinking about these things, by writing, by exchanging ideas with colleagues, and by developing the repositories that some of you have talked about so that we have the source material that people like Bill need in order to teach their courses. If it turns out that ICANN is an appropriate focal point for these activities, that's terrific. So much the better. Let's use it. Let's use it productively and creatively. I want to thank Olga and all the participants, everybody who made this this session so interesting for me, and I hope for all of us.
Thank you very much, George. No tenemos más tiempo, ¿no?
Para nada. We don't have much time, not even to read the questions. We are going to read the questions. One of the questions is, do you believe that the topics that ICANN gives are enough to create a whole specialization? They are passing topics, the NSSEC, which is just a small part of the internet security. IPv6 is temporary, and it's just a stack. The rest is preserved, and the new GTLDs. the same for internet governance is something that's fashionable now, but it will pass and another fashion will come. This is what Luis Espinosa from Costa Rica says. We have to go, Olga says. Alexandra is reading. I'm going to read them all, and please ask them to send their emails. I'm going to say to the remote participants to send their emails so we can put them in contact with the panelists. Another question. There is,
how could those programs be turned into a full-blown degree program, perhaps a master program? This is, I don't know.
Don't you think the role of the academia in ICANN could be to recover the spirit of community that the internet had at the beginning? Currently, we see secondary markets of domain names, ISPs, that have no economic interest to implement IPv6, and that is no internet community. The academia could have a deeper role in ICANN than just teaching some technologies. This is what Luis Espinosa says again. I have another one from Michael Graham saying,
a site where resources, syllabic and pedagogic tools and ideas could be posted and conversation carried on between interested academics. Shablamo de eso.
Okay. Thank you very much to all of you.
Talked about it.
In the audience. Gracias a todos. Muchas gracias.
Thank you all. Thank you for being with us. A round of applause for the panelists.
Gracias.
Thank you.